The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James. Here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
We're just working through a little technical stuff. Can you hear now, Derek?
Yeah, I'm good.
You're good?
I'm not sure that this cord is great, so we'll see how long that lasts, but I'll just keep monkeying.
You just have to hold that position. Just don't move your head at all.
Hunched over, one arm down, leaning into the
mic.
It's
like when you had to, back when they had rabbit ears for the TV and you had to move them around, and it was like, right there, and then you had to maintain that position.
Don't move, stay right here.
Give me another piece of foil.
Yeah, right.
We are the Raised by Wolves podcast. We are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm Manny Hill. Derek James is here. And if you may have noticed, you may have heard a third voice here in this studio. This is episode 100, by the way, and we figured it was a perfect time to have this guy in with us.
Instead of doing the 80s sitcom style montage of like the greatest hits of the last 100 episodes, we decided to go a different route.
Special DVD release of all that stuff. Steve McPherson is here. What's up, buddy?
How is it going? Hearing the old intro music just puts me in the nostalgia. I just got the feels, you know. It's great to be back. It's lovely to see you guys. We caught a game earlier this season, which was really fun. So
the awful Dallas game that we struggled to watch.
Yeah, it was terrible. But, I mean, it was fun to hang out with you guys again. I'm glad to be here.
It's always good to see you. Well, welcome. Always good to see you. It has been, I mean, so much has gone on, I think, with this podcast and with you since you left us. But just how are you, man? Like, how it's been about a year now. Like, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. It's good. You know, personally, my oldest just had her birthday party last weekend. We did some Harry Potter decorations. It was fantastic.
That's underselling it.
We did a lot of
the most intricate Harry Potter themed birthday party I think ever.
It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of Pinterest inspiration for that. So that was good. So she turned 6. My youngest is 2. They're growing up so fast. And that's great. You know, the gig, I'm copywriter for Minnesota United, if anybody who's listening doesn't know that. You know, I've been there for a little over a year. And so I've been through a season, and now I've been through an off season. And it's incredibly busy. In addition to the season, our new season is about to get started this weekend.
Yeah.
We're playing the San Jose Earthquakes on Saturday at 9:30, which you'll be able to hear on 1500 ESPN.
That's right.
I can now announce that. It was announced today. So you can listen there. And, you know, in addition to that, we got Allianz Field is getting built. That's going to open next year.
It's coming along nicely.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It's so busy, but it's really fun. It's really fun to be part of a new team, a team that's sort of on the come up. And it's like, it's a sport that obviously is very popular, but you know, you're sort of building a following, and everybody who gets a chance to come to the stadium gets to see how much fun it is to be at a soccer game, which I was not even aware of. I had not been to a professional soccer game until I started working in soccer. So the experience of the atmosphere at TCF has been amazing, and it's going to go up on a whole nother level at Allianz. So I'm really excited for it, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I got a chance to go to a couple games last season, and you're right. It's amazing that you guys, because I will say you guys, because you are part of them too.
Company man.
It's amazing that you guys are able to put together that sort of atmosphere in a college football stadium.
Yeah.
I mean,
expansion team.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. In its first season in MLS, and I was really impressed both games that I went to. So do you find, now that you're like a year into this, you know, and maybe you can kind of speak for everybody within the organization, does it feel a little bit preparing for this season feel a little bit smoother
because
you got the season, that first season in MLS under your belt?
Oh, definitely. I think that's from everybody in the office up through the first team. I mean, I think that, you know, the team itself last year was 20 plus guys. who had just met, you know, in the last couple, in the last month and a half or so, like all playing together. And now we have sort of a core of guys. We brought, there's some rookies, so there's some young guys. We brought in some vets who are helping. But those guys are coming into a situation that's sort of established, which is a lot different than everybody trying to establish themselves simultaneously. So in that respect, it's a lot, I think it's a lot better for the team itself playing. I think for me, it's funny to think back to my first experiences of trying to write recaps of soccer, which, you know, it's not like I came in with nothing. I actually played more soccer growing up than basketball in a more organized way. I played like intramural soccer all through college and stuff like that. So it's not like I was unfamiliar with the game. I played FIFA. I've played Pro Evo. I sort of know the ins and outs of it. But just the style of writing and what was required, being, you know, the guy for the team as opposed to, you know, a blogger or, you know, a freelance journalist, depending. You know, I remember I wrote a recap of a preseason match, and I sort of did like what I would do for a Wolves game back when I was covering the Wolves. And it was like, I watched the whole game and then I sort of delivered my viewpoint on what was good and what was bad. And I made some jokes, and there was the head of PR was like sort of looking over that stuff for me at the time. And he was like, yeah, it's good. Just don't make any jokes. we just don't need your opinion. And not like in a, you mess this up way, but I was like, oh, he just sort of edited it back. And now it's like, it's just a very different thing, which is fun. I write a good amount of articles for the website that are my viewpoint and that, I get my voice, you know, in there. But there's kind of a fun thing about writing a sort of a gamer, that's a very beat reporter-ish way to write it. I take notes as things are happening. I take notes when things happen that are important. And then as I'm going, I'm sort of writing the recap behind it. I sort of try to write the first half after the first half and the second half after the second half. And then I put an intro that sort of sums it up. And then I get quotes from the coach, from Adrian Heath, who's fantastic, and put him in.
I love Adrian.
And then I publish it, you know, and it's like, it's kind of a fun challenge. It's a different kind of writing. And so I definitely am excited. I'm looking forward to doing that kind of stuff again. And Adrian, yes, let's just say again, Adrian is fantastic.
He's great. And last year, and I'm hoping it continues into this season, but last year I was able to produce the Adrian Heath show with Jamie and Adrian. And it was, I mean, I kind of got the sense when I first met Adrian, I kind of got the sense he was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
He just kind of has that personality.
Yeah.
And then I got to know him more kind of behind the scenes and everything. And he's the best. He's awesome.
Jamie, I don't care for.
He's okay. That Watson guy, he's okay. No, I just try to give
Jamie a lot of grief as much as possible. I don't know why. He's so good natured. Isn't it awesome. Jamie? He's kind of one of those guys, like, you just want to needle him because he is so nice. You kind of want to see how far you have to like push him before he'll like react to you. So, but he's great. He's a great guy too. You know, I started a podcast with Callum Williams, who's the play-by-play guy. He's British.
Another guy I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah, and he's great. So we just started that. I think we've done 3 episodes now. And it's sort of focused on soccer, but also things that are not soccer. We're going to start having some guests and things on as well. So, that's fun. It's kind of fun to be back in the podcast game. And you know, there's a lot of good content, cool ideas we've got for the season. So it's good stuff.
Well, we miss you here. Yeah. But we said this the last time, you know, we had you on. We miss you here, but we are extremely like happy for you, and it sounds like you're really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And that's good because we love you. You're our guy. So I do want to talk a little bit of basketball.
Let's talk some basketball, man.
We were just, before we started taping, we were talking about the dunk contest, and I know you got a chance to watch a little bit of it. We were talking about Larry Nance Jr., and I think all 4 guys were pretty good. I mean, Oladipo was probably 4th in terms of how the guys did.
Just kind of missed.
It was okay.
Depot has that thing where, like, he was in the dunk contest before, and he also sort of failed to show out for it, and that sort of happened again, where it's like, you know, he can dunk, but it just, I don't know, it didn't translate to that format, and that's true for a lot of guys in a lot of ways. You know, it's like some guys, big guys. I remember Amari Stoudemire, who had an underrated dunk where Steve Nash said they had the soccer dunk where like Steve Nash served it up and he dunked it, but you know, he's a big guy, and it didn't translate the same way. Some guys who are in-game dunkers, it doesn't really translate. Depot's kind of the same thing, I think. I mean, maybe in a slightly different way, but he just couldn't really pull it off the way that other guys can could pull some of that stuff off. So yeah, I think he was probably fourth, but I mean Dennis Smith Jr. super underrated that dunk. Oh. That is probably the best dunk of the contest.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Yeah.
That was incredible, especially in slow motion. Like I thought at the time, like, this is why we have slow motion.
Oh yeah.
Because like to us we're like, oh yeah, between the legs, whatever.
Sure.
And we're not naturally gifted, the average person on the couch watching that. Yeah. And then you slow it down, you just see between the legs, he switches hands and he has to elevate long enough to pull it off.
And he can't palm it. That was the other thing that like you realize watching it in slow motion that he's got to kind of cradle it against his forearm because his hands aren't big enough. And so the idea that you would do that and go between the legs and then like cock it up in the other hand. And it was his left hand, right? I think he finished with his left.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so that was an underrated dunk. Shades of Andre Iguodala getting robbed from the dunk where AI threw it off the back of the glass, which is still, I mean, even it's one of my favorite dunks. It's the most, he was robbed, obviously. But it's also just, period, one of my favorite dunks from that contest, partly because of the dunk, which is amazing.
Who won it that year? I'm trying to remember.
That was Nate Robinson. That was like the first year that he won it. So he's a short guy, so he gets a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
But the things about...
So does Kevin Hart, apparently.
Well, he's always shorter than I remember. Like I feel like he's getting smaller. So, but the thing about that dunk was Iggy's... he nearly hit his head on the backboard. Like when you see it in slow-mo, he's like ducking his head. He's probably missing it by like... 3 inches max.
Yeah.
And he goes under and he dunks it and then he just keeps running. He just ran out. Like he lands and he just runs the whole length of the court and then out the tunnel. And then there's another angle that shows Iverson's reaction. And I guess because Iggy was just like, just throw it off the back of the glass, I'll take care of it. So it's not like Iverson knew what he was going to do. And so Iverson has that moment of like sort of boyish surprise and delight at seeing this dunk happen. So yeah, shades of that with Dennis Smith Jr. I thought that dunk was super underrated. But we were talking about how Nance was good. I enjoyed Nance. He had a sort of, it wasn't flashy exactly, but he knew how to sort of sell the dunks and some of his stuff on replay, you realized how far away he was from the hoop on a lot of it and sort of he had a lot of that power thing, which is great. I was always a big Dominique fan. So I like the power dunks as well.
See, the thing I like about Nance is that some big guys, they get into trouble, I think, when they're like, oh wow, what am I going to do to keep up with all these smaller guys?
Yeah.
He's like, what do I do? What can I do? I'm going to focus on that and do something within that framework rather than try to, you know, be Vince Carter.
Yeah.
Or Zach LaVine or do something that
he
can't.
Yeah, the most successful big men have been guys like, I mean, honestly, for all of his other faults, like JaVale McGee, the dunking on two hoops and stuff like that. Like, you know, that stuff is like he used it in a good way. And Nance with that tip dunk, which was also a sort of a throwback to Dwight Howard did a dunk like that where he bounces it twice essentially. And then dunks
your favorite player, Dwight Howard.
We haven't talked about him this year. I don't think he's really that worth talking about.
Well, why would you? He's not doing anything. So I don't know.
He hasn't said anything outlandish either. So. Yeah.
No, he hasn't.
And again, as somebody who's not following the league professionally, but I read a lot. I'm on Twitter a lot. I watch games when I can. It's like, I'll see something come up about Dwight, and I just kind of do that like, okay. I don't have to, that's not my bag anymore.
This is usually the time of the season, right, where we start hearing about Dwight complaining
about
his role.
About his touches.
Not getting enough touches. Right. And, yeah, but he's been quiet.
All right. Good for him.
Yeah.
Future Hall of Famer, Dwight Howard.
How much Wolves basketball have you watched this year, would you say?
I probably watched about, it's either half a dozen to a dozen games total. And I've watched snippets here and there. I watch a good amount of recap stuff, like highlights. I read a lot, actually, which is kind of nice because that was one of the things that, you know, the path of going to cover the NBA as a freelance writer for me came from watching the game and really enjoying that and then really enjoying all the people writing about the game, reading, you know, Harvard Paroxysm and Free Darko before getting really heavily into basketball. But a lot of those guys, you know, Grantland, obviously, reading that stuff, I loved that. And I would often I remember when I first started out, I would read something and I would take something from something I read and then build off of that into doing something else. By the end of sort of doing freelance basketball writing, I had no time to read other writers. You know, it was sort of like I had this small number of people who I would try to read.
It's so hard to do.
It's so hard to keep up like that, you know? I mean, and obviously the landscape of basketball writing has changed a lot, especially in the last, like, 3-ish years, I would say. Mm-hmm. But but you know, it's nice to get in there and read Zach Lowe's stuff now, to listen to, I listen to the Lowe Post all the time. Rob Mahoney's Breakaway is fantastic listening for anybody who's a basketball fan. So, you know, I have a commute now. I have to drive to an office. It takes me about 20 minutes. So, you know, a podcast is a thing I will dig into. So Zach's podcasts are, you know, there's a lot of good content out there. So I am watching games when I can and when I have the energy at the end of the day to do it.
What do you think of JJ Redick's podcast? Have you listened to his?
I've only heard one.
The only one I've heard is the one he did with Kat.
I think that might have been the one that I listened to. I think so. I remember I like JJ. I think he's good at that. I interviewed him a while, probably a year or two ago, like a long interview, which I just posted some of those interviews online because I started writing a book. I started a project that was going to be about journeymen and sort of glue guys, I guess was the term that came up a lot. And I had these interviews and I had sort of collected, I had a list of probably like 12 to 15 people. But I only got through like three or four before, you know, I was doing it in the off season and then the season would start and I had to sort of put it on the back burner. But I ended up talking to Duke guys. I talked to Battier and Dunleavy and Redick, and I had other guys that I was working on and then I didn't get to it. But Redick is fun to talk to. Very bright, you know, like incisive. He knows how to talk about the game and he has insights. So he was fun to talk to. So I'm sure his podcast is good. I thought the episode that I listened to was good. So
cool.
He's a good shooter.
He is a very good shooter.
I still can't believe he has a lot of tattoos. Like, shockingly,
his
a large
sleeve
amount of tattoos.
Is so cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
I finally saw it up close after seeing it on the court. I'm like, oh, that looks like it's probably cool. And I saw it. I'm like, okay, that's really cool.
He always had like some I forgot that because it's like you look at him, like you think of him at Duke and he just looks like a choir boy. Right?
Yeah.
Who everybody
like
hated.
Your average Duke white boy
when
star.
I first started seeing him get those tattoos, I was kind of surprised. Like, oh,
yeah,
JJ Redick,
tattoos.
And then he came out. Redick been hanging out with.
Yeah. I mean, he came out with a sleeve. I was like, oh, all right. So
oh, cool. But,
someone taught him curse words.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I can't judge now. I have a tattoo, so, you know.
I think I'm the only one in this room right now that doesn't have any.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't have any tattoos at all.
Have you thought about it?
I've thought about it, but I don't. It's funny. My girlfriend just asked me this question the other day. She was like, she just kind of randomly, because she has a couple. And she was like, would you ever get a tattoo? I was like, yeah, I've thought about it, but I don't want to get one just to get one. Like, it's got to be some meaning.
See, I didn't get my first one until I was 28.
Okay.
Old man, I didn't like...
I was
40. Like a year
ago. That's cool.
That's young by my standards because I'll be 34 next month.
Yeah, so it's like you don't have to rush into it. I think the tattoos that people regret are the ones like, oh yeah, I ran down to the tattoo parlor on my 18th birthday and got it, and I hate it.
Yeah. There's a really good article last year that Andy Greeter, who used to cover the Wolves and now does, I think, Gopher men's football and then the Minnesota United.
Yep.
He did a great interview where he talked to all the guys about their tattoos. And it was really funny because he talked to Fran, Francisco Calvo, who's the captain, and he has like really meaningful tattoos. They're beautiful, and he has a lot of them. He has like a rose in the back of his left hand, which has, I'm not sure, I can't remember the exact details. It memorializes his wife had a miscarriage, and they lost their child. They now have another child, and it has like her initials or something like that, and you know, it's beautiful, right? The next guy he talks to is Sam Nicholson, who's this like, he's a youngster, he's like 22, he's from Scotland, and he like regrets every one of his tattoos. Like, so he's like asking him some questions, like, yeah, I can't do a Scottish accent, but he's like, you know, I got that, and I was 18 and I was dumb, and you know, now I have it, I guess. And it's like, he has like a woman with flaming red hair on his arm, and he's like, eh, she's good looking at least. Like, it's just like the juxtaposition of like Fran's super deep, meaningful tattoos, and then Sam's just like, yeah, I don't know what I was doing. It's kind of tattoos. They run the gamut, you know. So, like, I waited a long time for mine, and it's a drawing that my daughter did. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, "That's it. That's the first one." So, and now I feel like I could get another one, and it wouldn't have to mean as much at this point. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. What do you think about? You know, I don't know how much NBA you've gotten a chance to like actually like sit down and watch because I know you're so busy. But just. What do you think of this season as a whole? We can maybe get into the Wolves a little bit more in a little bit here, but just as a whole, I mean, does it kind of seem like it's inevitable that it's going to come down to Golden State and Houston? Or, I mean, they're the teams that are like draining threes all over the place, and they just seem like they're so far ahead of everybody else, at least in the Western Conference right now.
Yeah, it sort of feels a little bit like you know, one of the things I was looking forward to in this, when you're looking for the silver lining of this fact that you're probably going to end up with, like, obviously this is in a little more of a question this year in terms of the Warriors-Cavs rematch, but, you know, that looked, before the season, it looked like that's who it was going to be. And it sort of gave me a feeling like it's kind of fun then, because some teams are just going to try other stuff. There's going to be a whole lot of other storylines that burble up underneath, because not everybody's going to be able to compete for that. So you have this weird thing of like all these teams that all have like 18 losses right now. Like everybody's just racing to the bottom, which is interesting in itself. You have, you know, the Cleveland blowing stuff up at the trade deadline, which I thought was really interesting. Houston's, you know, emergence as this, their image of, I don't really know what to make of the Warriors versus the Rockets in terms of that good guy. This sort of, you know, immediately there's shades of gray. There's all kinds of interesting ways to parse this stuff. But you sort of have like the good guy and the bad guy, right? Like the one you're pulling for and the one you're not. And so everybody feels like the Warriors are the evil empire. They went and got Durant when they were already good enough to probably win a championship. They're just sort of layering on more guys to go get that ring. But they also,
and then you hear like LeBron rumors like a couple of weeks ago.
I know,
or somebody like LeBron, LeBron could go to the Warriors.
Yeah,
like, no, LeBron
would
no
listen
more.
To the Warriors in a meeting, which is like, well, yeah, why wouldn't he?
Who wouldn't?
Right.
You know, so.
Right.
But it's like the Warriors also seem really awesome as an organization when you pull back from that. You know, it's like Steve Kerr has been killing it. Like, he's been amazing. I think that they're a lot of the stuff that has gone on.
There's a lot
with,
of really likable guys in that organization.
You know, the sort of social awareness, the, you know, giving back to the community, like all of that stuff is fantastic with them. Kerr seems amazing. That clip that was out a while ago of him sort of boosting up Steph Curry, you know, like, I don't know if you guys saw that, but it was like, he was mic'd up and it was like, he was talking to Steph and he's like, these are your attempts. Like, look at this. He's like, maybe you don't feel like you're contributing, but you are. Like, you being out there, that does something. You're a special player. Like, just in the most, in that meme way of like, find somebody who looks at you the way Steve Kerr looks at Steph Curry. You know, like, he just, the appreciation was so genuine, and that's one of those moments where you go, that's what a coach does. Like, the stuff that we see, like the judgments we make about the tactical decisions, the substitutions, the timeouts, the play calling, how they are with the media, like all that stuff. We get to see that stuff, and then what we get from mic'd up is usually a tiny sliver of that, because they want to control what gets, you know, put out on TV. You get something like that, and you really see that, like, yes, it's a personality. Yes, it's the way you connect with those guys. That stuff's all really important, and I think Steve Kerr has that, you know. But I also appreciate Mike D'Antoni, and I think, like, Rob Mahoney had a great podcast, his breakaway podcast from last year on D'Antoni, talking about D'Antoni's belief in the system and the sort of thing of, he would rather go down doing what he wants to do in terms of like 3-point shooting and getting to the line and stuff, than to try to do something, you know, sort of as a halfway measure that is not as offensively spectacular. And you can see that it's paying dividends, because in a lot of ways, Harden is like the next evolution of somebody like Steve Nash. You know, as good as Nash was, Harden does all that stuff, but at a much higher level. I mean, it's all relative. There's a lot of other qualities that Steve Nash brought that maybe James Harden doesn't have. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, you've seen this evolution of an idea as well with Houston. And so the amount of space between those two teams is very hard to, like, it can be a little hard to suss out exactly who you're pulling for or who you think should win in this particular battle of the three-pointers, you know. But man, let's talk again about that Cleveland blow up at the trade deadline, because that was a thing that was
so much fun.
It was crazy. It was nuts. And it was like, of course, it was like the day before, everyone's like, it's probably going to be kind of quiet, you know. And it was like, it was relatively quiet except for Cleveland.
And the only thing you really heard with Cleveland is just like, or are they going to get DeAndre Jordan?
Right,
like, you
right.
know, that was kind of
like all these
that they
names
were in talks
that they
with the
were
Clippers.
Interested in.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden that happens where Isaiah gets moved, and you know, they get Clarkson and they get Nance from the Lakers, and you know, they get George Hill, and then, you know, Rodney Hood comes over, and it's just like, whoa, that's the roster has changed.
Well, we expected them to be interested in, you know, all these guys. I don't think we understood that they meant all at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
On the same day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because the thing about, and I said this at the time, occasionally I have an insight again in basketball. It doesn't happen as often as it once did, but I was struck by the fact, and this is, and this is something that's very different from soccer. In my experience, I've learned now with soccer that when you have 11 guys on the pitch, one guy has far less impact on a game. You know, there's a couple guys like Messi and Neymar and these names who can do things on their own to affect the course of games. But you can have an amazing striker. If he never gets the ball, like, it doesn't matter. Like, he might never see it. If you have that amazing striker but you have no defense, it doesn't matter because they're gonna get scored on. So it's not the same kind of thing where there's one guy who can dictate what happens with the team. And watching all that stuff happen with Cleveland, I was struck by the fact that, like, there's no other team in the NBA, and this speaks to LeBron, where you could blow up the team that much at the trade deadline and still be like, there were probably contenders, you know, at this point. It's like LeBron makes that possible, but you only have to do that on a team that LeBron's on. You know, like, it's because of LeBron that you did that, but it's only possible because you have LeBron. There's sort of this catch 22 about that, which I find that really interesting, because it's like, if you had some other, if it was like Paul George in that cast of people of other players, you know, you wouldn't blow it up, because you'd be like, maybe if we blow it up it could all go south, right? And then if you did blow it up, it could either all go south, or, you know, maybe it works out, but you wouldn't expect that, you know, you're, at that point you're sort of like, I'm throwing in the towel, we're changing things around. That's not what they did. They're like, we have LeBron James, so whatever else we get, it's probably going to be, we hope it helps. And the immediate impact of that, where suddenly it was like, we have fun again. And I was like,
we're athletic and we're running and we're shooting threes and we're playing a little bit of defense.
Well, that was the problem with them. They looked just a year younger, a year older and slower all season long. It's like, this team isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
But I thought what was interesting, the two biggest, there are two significant names that weren't moved, J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson, the two players who got paid after the 2016 title.
Yeah.
I understand why they did, but it's I don't know if it says anything. It might just not mean anything that those guys didn't get moved and all the newer pieces did.
Yeah. I don't know. It's I was struck by the fact that I was like, this is how I play NBA 2K, basically.
Yeah.
Like, except I do that like once a week, you know, leading up to the trade deadline. I just keep blowing it up. But those relationships, I think some of the Tristan and JR stuff and some of those questions, it's an interesting question for LeBron's legacy and like how difficult of a player he is off the court and how much that impacts his on the court performance. Like, that was the thing that always came up with KG, right? Was the fact that they gave KG a good amount of leeway in Minnesota in terms of like, who are his guys? Like, who did he think would help the team?
Yeah.
And the guys he thought would help the team were terrible. Like, it was like Troy Hudson and Mike James and Trent Hassel. Like, and then, you know, Trent Hassel was fine until they changed the hand checking rules, I think. But like, like, those guys, he didn't know, you know? And I think that LeBron's had that a little bit with, like, James Jones, you know, who a guy he's been really loyal to, and is, I'm sure, a great guy. And, you know, and again, I'm hesitant to judge locker room presence and things like that. But the fact of the matter is, James Jones was, like, taking up a roster spot that could have been taken up by somebody who could play, like,
well,
at that
Steve,
point.
Well, Steve, you know, he went to the finals 7 years in a row LeBron, you know.
Yeah. I mean, good for him, but it's like, do you give LeBron the leeway, like, and you accept that, like, maybe some of the personnel decisions are not going to be as good, but that's okay because it's LeBron is still there, you know?
Right.
So, you know, obviously Tristan was his guy. They shared an agent, right? So, you know, he's got to hook him up, but was that the best decision? I don't know. I guess time will tell. So,
yeah. Well, how much is left on Tristan's deal? Is it 2 years, 3 years?
Probably two. I don't know if it was a 4 year deal. But this is year two.
I'm going to say I think it was two, but I'm saying that as that's only like a vague impulse from back in the back of my brain that I'm like, I think it was a 4 year deal. But
what do you think of the Celtics? Because, you know, they make the trade for Kyrie, which, I mean, that whole thing with like Kyrie requesting that trade, and I mean, that kind of shook up the landscape of the NBA in that, you know, last summer. But so they trade for Kyrie, they sign Gordon Hayward, and you're thinking, man, like, this is, and they've got all the, you know, they got, you know, the Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and all that, and you're looking around and you're like, hey, Celtics are, they've got this nice mix of, young guys, mm-hmm. and they've got this superstar point guard now, and then they just signed this big money free agent, and they still have Al Horford, and then Gordon Hayward breaks his ankle like 2 minutes into the season.
It was a heartbreaker.
Yeah, but I mean, they've had their moments where you're kind of worried about them a little bit and, you know, how they look, but for the most part, they've been able to sort of weather that storm.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of have a sense about the Celtics that so long as Brad Stevens is steering the ship,
they're going to be okay.
They're going to be okay. And that they could, I think one thing that I've come to appreciate from working on the team side in a sport as opposed to covering it from the outside is how important patience is and an understanding that you're not just playing for today. You're not just trying to put out, I mean, you always want to be competitive and you always want to, be getting better and putting out the best team you can put out to help you win. But you also understand that there's certain limitations and that sometimes it's like if you try to go for something and you don't get it, like, or even if you get it and it doesn't work out, like you get Gordon Hayward, you're like, this is terrific. Yeah. Oh, but he broke his ankle. You can wait on it. You know, you're like, well, let's see what we got. You know, like it's. I think we tend to overstate the extent to which we're like, oh well, you need to blow it up, or you know, tank or whatever you have to do to get out of this situation. It's like, see what happens. Like it's unpredictable. Like the future is unpredictable, and we overestimate how much we can determine what happens in the future.
Yeah.
And I think the Celtics have sort of been the evidence of that this season. You know, they, with Gordon Hayward going down, you're like, ah, well, it's terrible. And then they start on this amazing hot streak. And then, you know, they hit the rocks. They've gone up and down. But I sort of feel like you're looking at Brad Stevens, who's young, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we could be looking at the next, and I'm not saying he's Popovich, but like, we could be looking at a situation like that where a guy comes in with the franchise, it's the right fit, and then he just stays there forever. And they start off well. I mean, think about the Spurs and what led to them being able to have David Robinson and Tim Duncan at the same time that sort of started the Spurs dynasties. And then they kept making smart moves. And it's not that they didn't – I mean, I'm sure they made – I mean, I'm assuming they made mistakes along the way. I don't know for sure.
We just didn't notice.
It seems like they did everything right. But, you know, that's the thing is, like, you have Danny Ainge, who's shown to be a good GM. You've got Brad Stevens, who's an amazing coach. You put those two things together and you have good players and you just try to like make that, you know, alchemy happen. And they're doing well. I mean, I don't know if that means that they're going deep in the playoffs, but probably, especially given, you know, Cleveland's looked a lot better, but it's, you know.
By the way, how smart does Danny Ainge look moving on from Avery Bradley? And Bradley has a terrible season in Detroit, gets flipped again. And then Isaiah Thomas struggles after coming back from the hip injury, and I haven't really seen how he's doing in LA.
The fact
still.
That he was able to trade for Kyrie without having to give up Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, that's incredible that he was able to pull that off.
Yeah, it's amazing. Jason Tatum's been really fun. I saw him play at an AAU tournament here. In
he
the
has
Twin
never
Cities,
met a shot so. He didn't like.
No, and it's just funny because there were certain guys. And again, this shows you how quick stuff can change. Like the guy who stood out to me at that tournament was Harry Giles, who looked like a world beater, you know.
Yeah.
But then, you know, had knee problems.
Yep.
And, you know,
drafted by the Kings.
Yeah, I know.
So his career's over.
Yeah. I mean, like he might end up having a career, but like Tatum was probably second on that list. Like I thought he looked really impressive, but not anywhere near as good as he's looked now, you know. So you never know. It's like you can make, obviously I'm not a professional scout, but it's like you sort of make observations. You're like, this is where this guy's going to go. But then one guy's trajectory goes way up, another guy's goes down, you know. It can be hard to predict, but yeah, Ainge definitely made out. So what's up with Kawhi? This is the thing. Okay, now I've barely paid attention to
that
this.
That is like a serious, like underrated thing.
That's,
that
I wanted
everybody
to
needs
ask
to be paying
you about
attention
that
to.
Because it's like you hear these things about like he's not coming back. Oh, he is coming back. Like what's... What's going on, guys?
I don't know. Well, I think part of this too is just because we're not used to seeing the Spurs in this kind of situation where somebody is like apparently unhappy. Like we kind of saw it a little bit last year where LaMarcus might have been a little bit upset or he just wasn't happy or whatever, but it sounded like he and Pop kind of straightened that out and smoothed things over there. But this is, we're so used to the Spurs just being, you know, they do everything quietly, and they make these subtle moves, and they find this guy that you never heard of, but then he turns into this terrific player.
Well, look what happened with Steven Jackson. Eventually, you know, he wore him Pop. And granted, Kawhi and Steven Jackson have totally different personalities.
Yeah.
But even Steven Jackson wore out his welcome. And, I mean, I guess like what some people said, like, no, both sides are just frustrated that, he can't play.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's an explanation. I don't think it's certainly the end of it, but it is, I feel like it's a very particular reminder that it will end. Like, everything ends at some point, you know? And like, when the Spurs really, when this era of the Spurs ends, like, whatever that means, if that means that, like, Pop is getting on, right? Like, if there's not a path forward for the team, I don't know how long he stays on the bench, right?
Right.
The moment where, like, Pop makes that decision that he's done, it's gonna feel like your dog dying for me.
I know.
It's gonna kind of be like, man, I didn't appreciate this enough when I had it, even if I appreciated it a lot. And now it's sort of this beautiful thing that's leaving the world in some ways, and we might not see that same kind of thing again, because the Spurs sustained brilliance is just there's flashes of brilliance and there's amazing players, right? There's Kobe was amazing in his own way, as frustrating as he could be, and the Warriors as an organization are very impressive, but like, for 20 years, like, the Spurs have been amazing.
Well, it's just it's crazy, because you just think about so many different names in the NBA, like, you know, KG and Kobe and Tim Duncan were, I mean, they all kind of came in, you know, KG was the first to come in, and then Kobe, and then Tim Duncan the year after that. But they were like the guys in the league for so long, and that you just never really thought about the time that was going to come where they were going to be done. And
Kevin
then,
Durant's an 11-year veteran, by the way.
LeBron's just in his 15th year.
That's insane.
Like, that's LeBron totally insane. Is still, like, that's nuts. Like, LeBron gets the 30,000 points earlier, you know, a few weeks ago, and we're, you know, and I'm like, because remember, I texted you back in December or November, and I said, LeBron's going to get to 30,000 points this year.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he hadn't turned 33 yet.
I know.
And I'm like, and then remember, I thought, is LeBron going to catch Kareem? Like, that's when you start thinking about it.
He very well catch
right.
Kareem.
Yeah.
Because I was going through the stats, and I texted you, and I was like, LeBron is seventh on the all-time scoring list.
He won't have to play like a god either to get it. He just has to be good.
Yeah. And then I thought, yeah, that makes sense. This is his 15th year in the league. It makes sense for him to be that high, but it's like, you think about him being a high school guy, and you just don't realize that how long he's been in the league and how old he's getting.
I mean, think about a guy like Garnett or, you know, Kobe. They got to, like, you know, you're talking about those guys who get to like 38, 39, 40. I totally can see LeBron doing that. I mean, he seems a lot smarter about his body than any of those guys. And he's got another like 5-6 years. You know, like, and again, he's also got the game. He's got the game that he can age into like a triple double, like a low key triple double, right? You know, like, where he isn't scoring as much. You know,
LeBron's going to be that guy where he's like 39 and he's still averaging like 16, 6, and 5.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I'm like, the thing is that I really enjoyed watching, you know, as mixed as the results with Garnett coming back to the Wolves were, I enjoyed so much watching him play the game, because you could see at that point how much his intelligence paid off, his footwork, his understanding,
incredible.
His understanding on defense, the fact that like he's 39 years old and he could stand at the free throw line and guard the whole court because he knew exactly how far to go out, how soon to recover, like how to move his body, where to put his feet. And the thing is you're going to see, like, you know, LeBron is obviously not what he once was athletically. It's like, you know, he's taken a step back, but when he really starts taking steps back, but you begin to see how smart his game is come out, like I'm sort of
all up here, man.
I want to see that, you know.
It's gonna be fun. I want to ask you about tanking, and I think when you were like fully a part of this podcast, we kind of talked about it a little bit, but it kind of came up again, you know, with Mark Cuban. And I mean, me and Derek kind of dug into the Mavericks last week on that other situation that we don't really have to address this week. But
really bad week for Mark Cuban.
Very bad week. But the other, I guess, more so minor situation
the basketball Mark Cuban, situation.
Yeah, you know, he kind of brought it up, and I don't. I mean, It's kind of a mixed bag, right? Like, people, it's kind of a polarizing topic. I mean, a lot of people that are like within the league or that cover the league that are like, look, this is, I mean, you've seen what the Sixers did, and now you see where they're at now as a result of what they did for a number of years.
Yeah.
But then you have that other half that's just like, I don't want to watch these teams like purposely trying to lose games. I mean, it's kind of interesting how polarizing that topic has become.
Yeah, it's touchy, you know, and I think that it's difficult because the way the league is set up, it's a viable option. And so long as it's a viable option, and so long as what we really value is winning in the long term, people are going to accept losing in the short term if it means they can, their team can win in the long term. You saw Philly sold their fan base on it, you know, like Embiid is nicknamed himself the process, right? Because of that. So not that every team is going to be able to like sell their fan base on it the same way that Philly did. I mean, that's sort of an amazing, sort of amazing what they pulled off there. But you know, it's really it's really hard to legislate stupidity out of anything. You can just look at anything in the world as this fact that, like, you know, you have a very small number of people. This isn't like it's difficult because you look at trying to pass laws that affect an entire nation of people, right? Yeah. You have millions of people and you're like, well, if you pass this law, you can prevent X amount of this. I mean, this comes up with, like, without getting all the way into gun control, you know, like this thing of the reaction of opponents of gun control, which is, you know, this isn't going to work, so we shouldn't do anything, which is, I'll just say, personally, seems ridiculous to me. It's like, it's a set of rules. It's a set of laws. It's a set of things you try, and it's not going to stop everything. That doesn't mean it's not worth doing something, right?
Yep.
But you're talking about, that's millions of people you're talking about. You're trying to legislate the behavior of, you know, 30 individuals, essentially, right? Like owners. And some of them are always going to be, you know, they're going to go against what it's a particular class of rich people, many of whom earn their money by being innovative or disruptive, especially nowadays. I mean, Cuban is one of them, Vivek's one of them, right? That, like, they got their money by, like, thinking different. And so they're always going to be like, we're going to think different here, you know, but then they're going to mess it up, you know, and like, so they're going to look at the rules that you set up and they're going to try to circumvent them and they're going to either fail horribly or they might succeed and then, you know, set up some new template that means you have to set some other rules, you know, so I don't really know what the answer is, like, if you can legislate it away, so long as you're giving the top pick to the worst team, I think that's a problem. If you think tanking is a problem,
right.
I've sort of, and again, it's like, I think it's probably a set of things that they have to change. I've always sort of liked the idea, this is a very basic idea, but that you give the top overall pick to the team that was closest to the playoffs, as opposed to the team that's the
team that would normally get,
so,
like,
reverse
14th.
Order.
Yeah, so that, like, you have, you know, for the lottery at least, and I mean, I don't know how you deal with the lottery chances or something like that, but maybe, again, it's like they get the highest chance at it or something, but I feel like at the very least that would lead to, in the closing, you know, weeks of the season, teams trying to still get to the playoffs, because if you got as close as you could but you didn't.
Question for you.
Yes.
Do you think then you'd have a problem with that team in the eighth spot?
Trying to bow out of that eighth spot.
God, this is a really good draft. We really like that guy.
Yeah,
we're not going to win the title. I mean, what if we just, you know.
You always create problems someplace, you know?
So. That might. Well, and here's the interesting thing with that, too, is it might just depend on, like, the incoming draft class for that year. If the number one pick is going to be Andrea Bargnani, then yeah, you're probably not that worried about trying to fall into that number one spot as much. But if there's LeBron James, Blake Griffin, Tim Duncan, then you're like, oh, I need that guy.
I've never really, I mean, you know, it's like, I don't think tanking is great. I've spent enough time watching late season Wolves games when they were not close to making the playoffs that I know it's like, whether you're tanking or not, like, futile basketball is not fun. But I think it's a mistake to think that, like, if you're playing in a league where there's no stakes and there's no salaries and there's no, like, everybody who has personal experience of playing in rec leagues or something like that, you have this innate sense that it's like, go out there and try to win every game, right? And that's a good attitude when there isn't a long game involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you involve livelihoods and, you know, salaries and year-over-year improvements and things like that, like, once you introduce the long game into it, you have to make allowances for things like resting your players, like for the postseason. You have to make allowances for things like trying to improve your draft stock if that's the way the draft works. It's not as simple as some people say. It's, you know, you want your players to go out there and play every game like they're trying to win it. You're not just simply trying to win as many games as possible. You're trying to eventually build a championship contender. That's a lot different than simply trying to win as many games as possible. I know it seems like, I don't know, maybe it's counterintuitive, but I think if you spend any time following the sport, you realize that, like, it doesn't go straight through playing every game your hardest, you know? So,
well, and I think, too, that with tanking, like, teams may rest guys, but the guys who play, I mean, especially on, like, these bad teams, I mean, you look at, you know, teams like the Nets, where they might not sign the most prominent players or guys who are just trying to find their footing in the league. If those guys are on the floor, I mean, they're not going to go out there, you know, and give half effort.
Right.
I mean, they're playing for their next contract.
Yeah.
You know, or a spot on the team next year or whatever it is, or just to stay in the NBA next season if they don't think they'll be back, you know, with their club.
Yeah.
I mean, so you'll still see that, but it's just teams not putting themselves in the best possible position to win.
And, tanking, people get twisted. I mean, we could say what we want about tanking, but it's like if you don't draft the right guys, if you miss on, and I mean, we've seen the Wolves do this over the years. If you miss on your first round picks, it's not going to matter how much you tank, because if you're not acquiring talent, like the Sixers, the Sixers had a plan in place, but also, like, they needed that plan to work. Like, they needed the guys that they took to work out, and well, for the most part, they had.
And they still whiffed on a bunch of guys, right? I mean, it's like how close were they to getting different guys who could have helped them, you know, like that they're like a step off from getting Cat and they get Okafor instead, right?
Yep.
You know, like they got, you know, Nerlens Noel, who ended up being a real problem, you know, in Dallas, you know. So they got Simmons, who looks good, and they've got Embiid, who could be great. I still have reservations about his durability, you know, like he's been good this season, but, you know, but that's an open question.
The Fultz thing is really weird.
Oh, the Fultz thing is super
weird. Let's talk about that for a second. What the hell happened to him? Like, I know he had the injury, like he got hurt, but man, like, he was...
The weird thing is nobody knows who's to blame.
He was playing on a bad team in college, which, you know, that, I mean, I don't know how you can really analyze that, but, I mean, you could see the talent, and then just he gets injured, and then now it's just like his shot is completely broken, and I don't know. Like, it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
It feels, and again, this is like from someone skimming from like 30,000 feet up on this stuff. The Fultz stuff, as it sort of started unfolding, was one of those things that made me go, I'm glad I don't have to think too much about this, because it seems like, it almost seems like there's like a cult element. Like, you're like, oh, you know, he was injured, and then that hurt his shot. It's like, oh, no, wait, he changed his shot, and that led to his injury. It's like, well, now his shot...
Allegedly.
You know, and it's like, and now he's okay, but now it's mental. And I'm like, okay, what, like, is he... Has he been brainwashed? Like,
what's going on?
Like, I sort of expect like it's one of those things where like Markel Fultz is going to like run out of a house and have a neighbor call 911, and he's been like in the basement for 30 years, you know, like one of these people who's just like trapped, and they finally figure out how to get away, and you know, so that's sort of how I feel about Fultz. Like, I would love to see. I mean, again, it's like you think about like five picks like that, right? You've got Simmons, Embiid, Okafor, Noel, and Fultz. And you've got Embiid and Simmons who are basically panning out. Like, that's – it's how much, it was so much work to get those five picks, you know?
Yeah.
It's well, so, again, it's no guarantee. If you blow the picks, then all that tanking is for naught. So.
You know, and it really does feel like luck that the Sixers got even those guys, because you, like, look at the Fultz situation, and they didn't know what he was doing with his private trainer between summer league and training camp. Which seems weird to me that you wouldn't keep tabs like, hey, what are you working on? You know, we want you to focus on this. Fine, you have your own guy, whatever.
Yeah.
So they come back and Brett Brown in training camp goes, yeah, well, he changed his shot. We don't know why. And then he can't hit a shot. And so it seems weird to me that the Sixers don't know or didn't know what's going on with their own number one pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't have any way to regulate that. And it's just so weird to me that a team makes that investment and they don't do everything they can to, you know, protect it.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing, like, luck comes into so much of this, too, with just, like, the lottery. You think about the Sixers, you go back to that that 14 draft, well, if Embiid doesn't have, like, the injury, or, you know, if he doesn't have, like, the surgery, after Kansas.
Yeah.
Like, he's the number one pick.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
all due
for
respect
sure.
to Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah.
Embiid was like the bona fide number one pick yeah. until
teams will
he
go
had
for the
situation.
The transcendent big man every time.
Oh,
right.
Yeah,
so
sure.
in some ways, like, the Sixers kind of lucked into him having that situation and him falling to where he fell. I think it was, what, four?
No,
I think it was four.
I can't remember now.
Three or four.
But yeah.
But, you know, otherwise Embiid was going to be the number one pick to the Cavs
Jabari
at the
was
time.
Second.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jabari was second, then Embiid must have been third or fourth or something like that. But then, like, the next year, it's like they could have got the number one pick and got Cat, but then they got unlucky falling to three, and then they had to settle with Okafor, and then we know how that situation worked out.
Yeah, it makes me think a lot about how the extent to which I feel like luck is not – luck plays a role in all of our lives, but there's just lower stakes for us most of the time than for most of these teams. And I think I think I said this earlier, but we sort of over-ascribe intentionality to like what happens, whereas there's just so much that's just simply out of everyone's control. And for us, who are everyday people, like little things about luck that like where you get stuck at which stoplight, like how long it takes you get to work, like if you chose to go this way versus going that way.
You get stuck behind the old guy at the gas station who's cashing in all his lottery tickets.
Every
to work.
Time. But anyways, you know, that like you, like these little things, they come out in the wash because then it just, you know, it sort of evens out eventually. But like with, you were talking about franchises, like how big that element of chance can be in changing the course of a franchise is gigantic, you know? So I think it's not so unusual. And I think that sometimes people get too caught up in what a franchise decided to do or how they did this. It's like, there's just, I read this book recently that was called, I'm going to blank on it. It's about common sense. I think it was like, it's easy once you know the answer or something like that. Everything is easy once you know the answer. I'm sorry. I'm butchering this book. It's good. If you look up for like, look for a book that's about common sense, and it just talks about it's sort of in the pop psychology category. You know, the sort of it talks about businesses, but it's pretty distinct about trying to not say this is how you run your business using this idea. It's simply a sociologist going through the fact that we want a story to explain what happened to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the way the world works. Like something could have been easily, something could have gone differently and it would have been a completely different answer. But we see what happens and we want to ascribe meaning to it, right? That's the way we want to understand the past. And then we think we can understand the future if we sufficiently understand the stories of the past. But that's not true either, because the future is just as unpredictable as the past was. So we have this idea, this is sort of how the book starts, but talk about as everything is obvious once you know the answer. That's the name of it. That, you know, it starts from this position, which is saying that we always think, oh, if we only knew more, we could have figured it out. But that's just not true. It's like he talks about things where computers, they try to come up with simulations where computers can control everything and they still can't control for everything. You simply can't get enough information because information contradicts itself. Things change. It's a constant dynamic, fluid situation. So I think in a lot of these situations that have to do with sports and tanking and picks and how this stuff pans out, it's just really hard to predict. You just got to take it as it comes and adjust on the fly.
Well, it's kind of like when you look back at like, you know, and Wolves fans are going to be mad at me for bringing this up, but it's like when you look back at the Flynn Curry thing.
Yeah.
Like Steph Curry is like an all-time great player now. He's the greatest shooter ever. He's got two MVPs. He's got two titles, all of that. But like people see that. Coming, you know, they see his whole career in Golden State and they just assume that like that is exactly what the Wolves missed out on when they took Johnny Flynn over him. And it's like, well, how do we know that Steph Curry would have been a two-time MVP and the Wolves would have won two NBA titles like if they would have just taken him? We just don't know.
One of the revisionist histories I sort of...
I'm not defending taking Johnny Flynn. Don't get me wrong. But
yeah, the defense of Flynn that I've come to sort of appreciate, and I still think it was a mistake to take Flynn particularly. Take Curry, but I think particularly Flynn was a mistake. I think there were things that were unknowable about Flynn's situation with his health.
Right.
Because his hip problems really did rob him of his career, you know, and you couldn't, I'm going to say you probably couldn't have seen that coming exactly at that moment.
Like you don't have him for the physical and you're not like, well, his hip could be susceptible to this career threatening injury.
Right, exactly. So given the thing is that like maybe maybe there's a way that Flynn, that doesn't happen to Flynn. And then he's actually a pretty good guard. He's not probably not as good as Curry because there's just not a chance, there's a low chance that anybody's going to be as good as Curry has become, including Curry himself, right? because part of the story of Golden State relies on Curry signing a contract at a moment when there were real questions about his long-term like viability as a player, right?
Yep.
That's what gave him that discount that made him the biggest value in the NBA.
And ultimately led to them being able to sign Kevin Durant.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So Curry's, and again, it's like, you know, Curry's ankles could have gone either way in those first couple of years. You know, like he had serious injuries that put his career in jeopardy. What if one of them had just been so bad that he couldn't keep going?
Like he never would have been 6 foot three Grant Hill.
Yeah, he never would have won. Regard. Yeah, right. Grant, that's a great example. I mean, because Grant Hill looked amazing, and then he never was amazing again. Like he was a good, serviceable player.
Still played like 17 years.
I know, right?
Crazy.
But like, you know, that could have been the story of Curry, and Flynn could have been a perfectly serviceable. Like Flynn could have been as good as Not to goad Wolves fans and talk about Jeff Teague. I don't know how sensitive that still is, but like everybody's
no
just,
idea.
Yeah, I know. I just try to stay away from it. But like, I got my own fan base. I got another fan base to talk to about their judgments on players. So, which is like every fan base has them. So, but like, you know, he could have been a perfectly serviceable point guard. You know, if those health problems hadn't happened. So, you know, I just think everything's unpredictable. It's just you gotta roll with it and see what happens.
By the way, we have breaking news. So Shabazz Muhammad waived.
Yes, that's right.
And
did that just happen?
When he clears waivers, he's going to be signed by the Bucks.
Oh,
really?
Yep.
All right.
Wow.
Shabazz Muhammad.
You haven't missed a beat.
Right back into it.
How about Corey Brewer? Who,
right.
You know,
go back to the Thunder.
He's going to the Thunder, and
that makes sense.
Going back to Billy Donovan.
Yeah, reunited with his college coach, and What do you think of Corey? Like, you got a chance to interact with Corey,
yeah,
didn't you?
Man, I love Corey, like, as a guy.
He's such a likable guy.
Oh, he's so awesome.
I miss your guys' dad talk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was, you know, we talked about our kids. And, you know, like, I think some of my fondest memories of Corey were, obviously, the 50-point game. And
so dumb,
when he had,
awesome.
And it was the night that he had to do a random drug test. And it was taking forever. And everybody was waiting, like, at his locker. Everybody else had left. And, you know, we obviously had to talk to him about this game. But he was like, he had to go to the – he had to do a pee test, basically, in the back. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting. And, like, when he finally walks out, he's like – everybody's like, "Hey!" He, like, puts his arms up. And he was like, "I did it!" Like, he's like, "Of course it would be this night. Like, the night I score 50, they want to test me for drugs." Like, which is hilarious. And then I was just remembering this for some reason. I don't remember. Somebody was talking about Flappy Bird. And I wrote an article about the Wolves and Flappy Bird.
Oh, yeah.
3 years ago, I think. 4 years ago. And
that was for 1500, wasn't it?
No, it was for True Hoop. So
was it? Okay.
It was for the big ESPN. And Corey was the worst at Flappy Bird on the whole team. And like Chase Buttinger was, I think, the high score at that point. He had like 327 or something, which was just way past anybody else's high. I think Ricky Rubio had like 180 or something like that. But Chase was so much better at it than everybody else. But I was in the locker room pre-match. Oh my God, sorry. This is my soccer thing going on. Pre-game, I was in the locker room. And so I was asking Chase, I was like, "So who's the worst?" And he was like, "Corey." Like, immediately, like, "Corey." And somebody else was like, "It's definitely Corey." It's like, I think as high as, like, 6. And Corey was, like, walking by. He's like, "Get off me. I got 7. which is amazing. So I really like Corey. And I guess – and he's one of those guys where I can totally see go to the Thunder, which is, like, a good team. They've got good pieces.
Yeah.
But they're still trying to kind of figure it out. He'll be a good element on that team. Like, I never liked him being the guy you lean on for three-pointers, which he often was in the Wolves somehow. But, man, yeah. his I have some fond memories of him getting out on the break with Love. Like, the Love-Brewer connection on the outlet passes was really fun. And, you know, he has I don't know who could miss a dunk more lovably than Corey Brewer, you know.
Derek Williams did it, it was enraging. It was when Corey Brewer did it, it was like
that's our Corey. Yeah. No, I really liked Corey Brewer. So I'm glad he's getting a chance to go to a team that's, you know, going to be in the, hopefully the Thunder in the playoffs. Are they in the,
yeah.
Probably,
I
yes.
think they're pretty much, I mean, nobody, you know, nobody
nothing's guaranteed.
Passed,
right.
Nobody past Golden State and Houston is locked in,
right,
but
right.
It seems like Golden or Oklahoma City's locked, or at least in a good position to get into the playoffs.
I mean, Brewer's had some good playoff games, you know, like that's, he's got that thing where, you know, he can sort of dial it in. You sort of need those guys. I feel like in the playoffs, it's like you need, and here's another theory that I don't know if I ever espoused, but you know, that in the regular season, like the stars tend to make a lot more difference, like night to night, like whether a star is performing well or not. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs, it's like, I feel like the main guys on teams sort of are playing at a consistently high level. And then what often makes the difference are those fringe guys. Like, you know, when you have, you know, your Derek Fisher's go off, when you have this always happens.
The Sean Stevens hitter, so.
Right. You know, like this is that game where and I'm blanking on the guy who hit all those three-pointers for the Lakers against the Wolves
in 2000. Rush.
Kareem Rush, thank you. You have the Kareem Rushes, right? So, and I think
Little brother played with the Wolves last year.
There you go. And so I think that Brew has some of that ability to be a guy at that moment in the playoffs, you know, to sort of like out of, I mean, he scored 50 points. Like, he's a guy who can out of nowhere do something crazy like that. So I like it.
Isn't it amazing? Like, you look at the Wolves, like, the Wolves have had Corey Brewer and Mo Williams have 50-point games for them.
The Wolves are crazy with that. They got rid of both of them the season after they did that. So,
and I mean, Kevin Love is third?
Who else is? Right. I think that's right.
KG's career high was 47.
Yeah, who else is? What other team has had 50-point scores that they got rid of? Like the same. Like, I think Mo Williams was let go, was way, or like, you know, they had a buyout or whatever, right? So that year.
Wasn't he traded to Charlotte for
Troy Daniels,
yes. And they got Gary Neal back.
Right.
Yeah.
But that was the year he scored 50 points. They traded a 50
point. That'll be
that
enough
was,
of that.
That was Wiggins and
Levine's rookie year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're pushing an hour here.
Are we getting
to
the Wolves? Man, we didn't even really talk about the Wolves. But
well, you know, we can get into the Wolves.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Again, I have this 30,000-foot view, so.
Well, let me ask you about the Jimmy Butler thing. I mean, that had to be, like when it happened, and when I saw him go down in Houston, and I'm just thinking, oh, God, please no.
Yeah.
Please no. Because he's just been, he has been like everything for this team.
Oh, yeah.
This year.
Absolutely.
I mean, everything. And, you know, and then they've recovered okay. And they play a couple bad teams, played Chicago at home, and, you know, beat up on a Sacramento team that obviously is lacking in talent and everything.
You know, I didn't really mind that, though, because they hadn't gone into a worse team's building on the road.
Right.
Well, duh, they'd be on the road. and take care of business and just handle them. Like, right. That has not happened all season long.
So how do they – I mean, Jimmy's going to be out for a little while here, it sounds like. How do they – and they've got this tough schedule. How do they, like, weather this storm and sort of hang on and get into the playoffs? I think they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But – how do they do this without a guy who has just been everything for them this year?
Yeah, I mean, I like to, I at least hope that it has an element of what I believe the Simpsons crowned Christitunity. you know, because there's a lot, you see all this kind of situation happen where, I mean, certainly the fact that it's not, you know, an ACL tear or something that would have put him out for a year is good. In the short term, sometimes events like this can, you know, for a team that has had trouble sustaining intensity or edge or consistency or, you know, defensive togetherness, or which over the last several years have been the Wolves at various times, right? And, you know, obviously Taj is a different element to the team, but, you know, there's a fair amount of holdover from last season, which was disappointing in a lot of ways. Sometimes it can be hard to sell somebody on doing something for the rest of their lives that you could sell them on doing for the next couple months, you know? Mm-hmm. And that sometimes in reaction to things like a guy going down, I mean, it's the Ewing theory, right? That like somebody gets traded and then instantly the team's better for some reason. I don't think that like the Wolves are going to suddenly be better without Butler, but it could be that kind of thing that like you got guys like Towns and Wiggins is really going to have to step up at this point.
Yep.
Maybe this is rather than, like, I've always felt that, like, Wiggins was handed this thing of you're the franchise guy, you know. Especially he got that before Towns came in. So certainly at that moment he was the franchise guy. And I think that that's kind of a lot to put on somebody that young, you know, to say, like, this is – you're going to be the guy who's going to carry this team for the next 5, 6, 7 years, you know. But if you're just saying, like, listen, we need you for this – these 2 months. You know, we need you for this span of time that you can like go all in at that moment. I mean, yeah. I hope that that's what's going to happen. I mean, Towns has looked great this season overall, and I think probably if anything, like if it's amazing that Jimmy Butler can put him in a shadow, given that he's leading the league in double doubles, and you know he's like after a little bit of a rocky start defensively, he's looked really good.
Yeah,
you know if I think they have the personnel to hold the line. The question is like, do those guys step up and do that in a moment of crisis? And I think it's kind of one of those moments that like you find out a lot. I don't want to be like totally cliche about this kind of thing, but like you find out about the character of the team overall. You find out if these are guys who can step up, and that if this is a moment where they really learn what they can do, they could become even better if Jimmy comes back in time for the playoffs and everything like that, and they can make a playoff push in a way that maybe they wouldn't have if Jimmy had not been injured. You know, like you look back at the 2004 Wolves, you know, which is the last good team we had, basically. And the role that's not injuries to their most important players, but going into that season, people forget that like one of their big offseason acquisitions was Michael Olowokandi.
Yeah.
Right. And that this was coming off of, Zerbiak had been an all-star, and both those guys were injured for a huge chunk of the year. And that led to Trenton Hassel and Irvin Johnson, who are like the most role players
ever. Irvin Johnson was like 1,000 and at the end of his career.
Oh, yeah.
At that point.
Irvin's amazing. I interviewed him once, and he's amazing to talk to. He's super great and fun to talk to. And he talked about it. He's like, we just wanted to do the dirty work. Like, Trenton and him are still friends, and they're like, we just wanted to go get the ball off the glass and give it to the guys who could score, you know? And there's something to be said for the, like, would the team have ended up doing as well? I know we think of it as a tragedy now, but you know, they came really close to going into the finals. You know, like they could have gone.
Nobody
to the finals,
listening to this could see how much Steve rolled his eyes at the thought of that season being a tragedy.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, so
I'm convinced 14 years later, and nobody can tell me otherwise, I'm convinced that if Sam were healthy, they would have beaten the Lakers.
The Lakers have said that too, haven't they?
Yeah. If Sam Cassell were healthy,
if he didn't do the onion dance. And ruin his own hip.
Sam denies that the onion dance had anything to do with it, just for the record. So, like, I interviewed him too. And so, but like, I don't know if they would have beaten the Pistons, but anyways.
Don't think they would have beaten the Pistons.
I probably don't think they would have either, but, but it would have been a fun final. So,
I think they would have given the Pistons a better
more than
fight
the
than the Lakers
game. Yeah,
did.
For sure. So, you know, like the way that season shook out depended so much on those guys not being available. You know, think about like the fact that David Robinson didn't go right to the Spurs when he was drafted. You know, there's all these things that are like, it looks like bad luck. And I don't wish injury on anybody, but it's like every team has to deal with it in some ways. And it's like Pop almost bakes that into the system a lot because this is, I think, my personal theory. I don't think this has ever been backed up by anybody, but I think that playing the bench and saving the starters is not just about resting the starters. It's about giving the bench experience such that when it comes time for them to step up, they're ready for it, you know? And so this might be one of those moments where you're like, okay, Bielitsa, you've been up and down. You've had some great games. You've had some bad games. You've had good and bad stretches. This is the time to step up and like be solid. And then if suddenly, you know, that helps Bielitsa become more consistent in the playoffs, like then it ends up being a benefit. We don't know how this is going to look, you know, from next year looking back at it. You know, we just don't know.
So. What I'm really curious to see is, you know, you can do this for a couple of games. And you might have said something similar to this. But I think it's easier to sustain this for a couple of games. But what are you going to do when you have 2-3 nights off in between games and they're so much more spaced out than they were in January? Yeah. And you have to sustain that level of intensity every single night without your best player.
Yeah.
I think that mentally, bringing that every single night and getting back to that level is going to be interesting to see if they can do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to matter a lot how long Butler is away, period. Like, not just away, not playing. I mean, he's obviously not going to be playing for a while. But if he's going to be able to be back with the team sooner, I think that could sort of alleviate some of that issue of like, because obviously he's been huge on the court, but I also know he's been huge in the locker room as a presence. So if he can get back to being that guy, you know, sooner than he's back on the court, that might help them, you know, sustain through this difficult stretch. So, you know,
On that 04 team, how cool was that? Couple of weeks ago, I guess more like about 2 weeks ago now.
Oh yeah,
the flip thing.
Yeah,
obviously, KG was not there, and that would have been wonderful for him to be there. But just like to see the back, like in the hallway, just seeing like Spree and Sam and like Mad Dog and Gary Trent and like all these guys just getting together. It's just like, oh gosh, it's just great. It's just fantastic.
Somebody was pointing out specifically like Ryan Saunders being back there and like what that must have been like.
Yeah.
You know, really put yourself in that position of like, you were this kid. Essentially, when that stuff was
probably
going
rebounding
on.
For guys,
yeah, you know, like
he probably rebounded for Gary Trent,
yeah, and just to see all those guys back again, like that must have been a trip for him. And I'm sure all those, I mean, I know some of those guys are in touch with each other and everything like that, but
it's just cool to see, like it just,
yeah,
you know, I mean, because that core wasn't like that core, especially like with Sam and Spree, it wasn't like they played together for like 6-7 years.
No,
I mean,
no.
You know,
yeah.
Mad Dog was there for, you know, a while.
Well, the Timberwolves don't have a lot in the way of legacy players either. So to see like a reunion like that for the Wolves is something cool.
It's funny because it is kind of like ramshackle in a way. Like this is your legacy is like Spree. Like, I mean, God bless him, but like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like the Lakers are like, let's get together all the greats, like Magic Johnson and James Worthy and Kareem. It's like these guys are kind of cast offs in some ways, you know? Like, but it's kind of awesome. I mean, I don't know. It's like, that's the legacy you got. So embrace
it. It's our legacy. Yeah. It's different from other people's legacy. It's not quite the Lakers and Celtics, but it's our
legacy. That's right. We're Minnesotans. We like to be underdogs. So
we hang division title banners, not championship banners.
Right. Well, and gold medals. How about that? How about the curling team? You know, like,
yeah. It was awesome. So as we wrap up, what is, I mean, we got the season starting for United this weekend. I mean, is it just going to get even more and more busy for you now that the season is starting?
I don't know. It's going to be hard to say. I'm sort of looking forward to the regular grind of the season, which I was sort of burnt out on by the end of it. But you go into the off season and then it becomes like there's just no organization of your time. It's just big projects coming at you along with little projects and so much. Because it's like my role as a writer there, what people see a lot is you know, I write articles and things like that, but I'm working on like all kinds of copy, like ad lines. People are coming to me and they're like, I need 5 to 7 seconds of copy at the end of this, you know, for season tickets, you know? And I'm like, okay. So then I have to come up with something like on the spot for that. So it's just a lot of little projects and a lot of big projects and all these different things in between. I'm hoping that we can kind of make way for some more sort of, you get into this kind of nice rhythm of you go to training on Tuesdays, you talk to Adrian, you talk to a player, you transcribe that, you put together a preview, you put the preview out on Thursday, the game's on Saturday, you do a recap, and then you start again. So having those kind of like pillars along the week kind of helps you organize everything else around it. But I'm sure it's going to be insane because, you know, Allianz Field is coming together. We have this awesome Allianz Field Experience Center that's in our offices.
Nice.
People are coming through to sort of check out the views from where their seats could be.
Oh, is that what's
like
at that office across the street?
It's like across the hallway.
Oh,
from
okay.
us. It's not across the street. It's like it's in the same building as the rest of the office. So, and it just opened today, so people are coming through. But you know, like as we're getting closer to the home opener, like we have our season opener in San Jose this week, but the home opener is March 17th. We're playing the Chicago Fire, which was our first road win of the year last year in Chicago. And you know, the first game last year was, I mean, it was the terrible game of soccer. Anybody will tell you that. Like, we lost horribly. We were slaughtered. But it was so awesome. Like the snow was amazing and the experience of it was so
great.
Cool. And so as we're getting back to it, I'm sort of getting antsy about, like, I don't know what it's like. You know, on St. Patrick's Day, it could be beautiful. It could be freezing. Like, we don't really know. So it
could be 8 inches of snow for all we
know.
That's
right. We don't know. Yeah. So, but I'm getting excited for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. That'll be a good game because it's like an afternoon game. I like that. We have a bunch of like 1 p.m. starts at the front end of the year, which I kind of like. I appreciate that as somebody who's a dad because it means you can bring your kids rather than, you know, if you come at 7, you can, I don't know how much of a game you can get through if you have little kids. So, it's going to get busy, but, you know, I wouldn't really want to have it any other way. So,
well, it is, of course, and you know this already, it's good to see you and, thank you for coming in.
Oh, it's awesome. It's
celebrating 100 episodes for us.
Yeah. It wouldn't have been right to do episode 100 without me on it.
I'm so glad I could be here.
Yeah. Steve McPherson, formerly of, Raised by Wolves, but you're always a part of this podcast as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Good to see you, buddy. You can listen to the Raised by Wolves podcast on iTunes. You can find us at podcastone.com, 1500ESPN.com as well. Once again, we are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. For Derek James and Steve McPherson, why not?
Sure.
One more time. I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your Wolves basketball. And Derek and I will be back talking more with you next week.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.